Hey friends, my name's Kevin and I'm one of the pastors at Friends Church Orange. We are so glad that you found us. Whether you are watching this message or listening to it in your car or on a run or wherever you may be, it's our hope that you would find hope and encouragement and joy in the person of Jesus today. If there's any way that we as a church can be a blessing to you, please let us know by connecting with us on our website. Here we go. Enjoy the message.
Good morning. Good to see you guys. Glad you're here. Everybody had enough sleep last night? Feeling strong or just lots of caffeine this morning? One of the two. But we love that you're here with us here at Friends Church Orange. All of us know inherently, because it's built into us, that we were created and designed for meaning. We desire to bring meaning into this world. We want our lives to matter. We want ourselves to have a sense of purpose. And as part of us then, as human beings, we bring that not only to our own lives, we want that for our institutions and our businesses and teams and whatever we are part of. And it gets expressed usually through a mission statement, which becomes kind of this North Star that kind of guides us to purpose and to meaning. And so here are some common mission statements that I'm sure most of you are familiar with. With every cup, with every conversation, with every community, we nurture the limitless possibilities of human connection. That, of course, is Starbucks. Come on, you guys know that. You're part of that, right? Here's another one. To serve consumers through online and physical stores and focus on selection, price, and convenience. That, of course, is Amazon. See, you have packages waiting for you right now at home. You're like, I gotta get out of here. To help all families discover the joy of everyday life. Anyone? Target, right? It's like, oh, there's lots of joy we find at Target. I always find more joy there than I needed, than I went in for, right? All the bulk stuff. But here's what's interesting about these mission statements, these North Stars that bring meaning and purpose. Sometimes we can drift a little bit from those, right? And here's one. It says this: to be plainly instructed and consider well that the main end of your life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ. This was the original mission statement of Harvard University, founded in 1636. They were committed to hiring all Christian professors. They wanted character formation to become primary and central to what they did, and they were all about equipping ministers to bring God's kingdom into this world through business and through education. And you can see how then, after about 80 years of drifting away from that, there were some pastors who became really concerned, like, I feel like we're drifting too far. We need to start something new. And so they went to a really wealthy philanthropist whose last name happened to be Yale. And they said, would you help us start an institution that kind of goes back to these central truths? Of course. So Yale was founded in 1718, and the motto that drove them was light and truth. That's what they wanted to be, the primary expression of people who went through Yale University. And I think all of us can start to feel this disconnect, right? Because both of them clearly excel academically in the world. They are the best of the best when it comes to preparing people academically. But neither one of them would resemble what the original founders' heart was for these institutions. And so think about your life just for a second, because you have a founder. You have a creator that created you, who puts inside of you these unique gifts and strengths and personalities and callings and desires and hopes and dreams, and sort of puts them together and wants to bring something purposeful and meaningful into this world. To bring meaning, you have a mission statement in front of you. And think about even just your best shot, right? Whether you've been trusting Jesus with your life and paying attention to what God wants for you or not. What would your hope be? If you had a mission statement for your life, for your relationships, If you had a mission statement for what you wanted your relationships or your marriage to look like, a mission statement for the kind of parent you wanted to be, or the kind of friend or roommate or teammate you wanted to be, what would it look like? And maybe more importantly, not just what would it look like, how close are you to living that out? Or have you experienced a little mission drift in that mission? You see, today, that's exactly what we're going to talk about. As we continue this journey called Encounter, we're going to look at the lives of people that personally encountered face-to-face Jesus. And we're going to look at what did they learn, not just through the encounter about the heart of Jesus, which of course we know is really the heart of God for his people. And today, here's really clearly what you're going to get a sense of. First and foremost, God's heart and his passion for his church. But not only that, God's heart and his passion for his people, for you. And you're going to really clearly get this invitation to sort of align your life to the meaning and purpose and mission that God intended for you. So I want to invite you to grab your Bibles. If you brought your Bibles, flip back to the book of Mark. We're going to be in chapter 11. If you need a Bible, there's always Bibles back there in the corner. Help yourself to one. Mark chapter 11, starting in verse 15. It says this, when they arrived back in Jerusalem, this is Jesus and his disciples. So when they arrived back in Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple and he began to drive out the people buying and selling animals for sacrifices. He knocked over the tables of the money changers and the chairs of those selling doves. And he stopped everyone from using the temple as a marketplace. He said to them, the scriptures declare my temple will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have turned it into a den of thieves. Talk about an encounter with Jesus, right? This is like angry Jesus. Like, what's happening here? You think about Jesus, and we use words to describe him. You probably think gentle and truthful and gracious and healer and freedom. You don't think guy walking through, turning tables over, knocking people off of stools, letting animals go free. So let me give you some context about what's happening here. Okay, this is a picture. That was awesome. Did you see that? It was like, whoa. I felt like I was in like a Star Wars movie. So this is a picture of what the temple probably would have looked like and the area of Jerusalem surrounding it. And just for scale, you got to understand, the temple, this is about 5.5 football fields. We love sports, so let's just measure it in sports. This is about 5.5 football fields long by about a little over 3 football fields deep. So just get a sense of that. It is absolutely massive. Think about how that would have dominated the landscape. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of this massive structure, you can see there's these steps and entrances, and then there's these courtyards, right? And you'll get to see these courtyards. And you see the court of the Gentiles. The Gentiles, of course, are any people that were non-Jewish, right? And so as they were coming, you could be in and around on those courts, the court of the Gentiles. Then there's the inner courts that are kind of like walled off there. And there's layers of those as well. So the first one that's kind of big, that would have been where the Jewish women were allowed to go. The next one would have been where the Jewish men and then the priests. And then, of course, there's the giant building, the temple, the Holy of Holies. And no one ever went in there except for one person, one priest, one time, one day a year to make a sacrifice for the sins of the people. It was the Holy of Holies because that is where the power and the presence of God resided. And so you got to understand, everybody's coming here, not just to Jerusalem, they're gathering in and around the temple in these courtyards for the Passover celebration. Okay, now there's about 3 celebrations that God had initiated where everyone came to Jerusalem, right? So 3 times a year, everybody fills Jerusalem. Jerusalem normally is about 18,000 people. It got over 6 times that. It's just massive. It's overflowing with people at this time. The city of Orange is about 130,000 people. So it'd be like over 800,000 people in the city. Like they'd be everywhere, right? Just on the street. I mean, people are everywhere in the city. And so Jesus, they're coming in and they're buying and trading animals, right? Because every family would have offered a sacrifice at the Passover. This celebration was about remembering God's goodness. It was about remembering God's power. It was about remembering how he rescued and delivered and saved his people from slavery in Egypt. And so they're coming together to remember all those things. And so families would have made a sacrifice. So they're buying and exchanging animals. So this is where Jesus shows up. He comes in and he ends up in this courtyard of the Gentiles, milling with people, and he just starts turning tables over. And just imagine if this is your first encounter with Jesus. Maybe you'd heard some stories about him. Maybe you, hey, I wonder if Jesus is going to show up. And it's like all of a sudden he shows up and you're expecting like kind teacher guy. Hey, maybe he'll do some miracles. And all he starts doing is just disrupting everything. That's crazy. I mean, what would you think? I don't know about you, but I'd be like, what is happening? And more importantly, right behind that, why is he doing this? I mean, regardless of what you know, don't you go, this seems a little out of character for Jesus. Why in the world would he be doing this? Well, remember, we're trying to understand his heart, which is the heart of God for his people and for you. And so to understand that, we got to go back, see what happened right before this. So look at verse 12 of chapter 11. It says, the next morning, as Jesus and the disciples, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're like, ah, that's why he's turning tables over. He was hungry. Like some of you are like, that's me. I get a little hangry. You know what I mean? Or if I mean, there's always one in a relationship, you know what I mean? And if you're like, I don't know which one of us is hangry, then maybe it's you. So either way, Jesus was hungry, but that's not why. He noticed a fig tree in full leaf a little way off, so he went over to see if he could find any figs. But there were only leaves because it was too early in the season for fruit. Then Jesus said to the tree, may no one ever eat your fruit again. And the disciples heard him say it. So now just for reference, because some of you have seen him, some of you haven't, this is what a fig tree would have looked like that Jesus saw. Imagine this hillside and all of a sudden he sees this beautiful tree. I mean, that looks beautiful. Looks so attractive. It's got all these leaves and Jesus is hungry and he's weak and he's got a long day ahead of him and so he needs energy. He needs light like all of us. And he sees this tree and he goes, oh, that looks fantastic. And so all of a sudden he walks over, but there's no fruit. On the outside, it looks so good. It provides all that shade. It looks healthy. It looks amazing. But you get closer and there's no fruit. There's no figs. It's all leaves, no fruit. And you see, this is what was happening in the temple. This is a metaphor and a picture of what was happening in the temple. It's what the temple had become. All leaves, no fruit. You know, the temple, clearly, just even what we see in drawings, it was one of the most beautiful and spectacular places physically you could imagine. I mean, if that structure existed today, it would be impressive. And so it was fantastic to look at, but it's not just what it was physically. Remember, it's what it represented spiritually. It was the power and the presence of God. It's where people were going to connect with and relate to the freedom and the forgiveness and the grace and the power of God on behalf of his people, rescuing them and delivering them from slavery. It's what it represented emotionally behind that, the encouragement and the joy and the hope that it would have provided for life. It's what it represented relationally. Imagine 3 times a year, everyone coming together, you'd get to see people you hadn't seen. You get to connect in relationship. How's that going? It's almost like weekends, what we get to do every weekend with a little more people. We get to connect. That's what they were doing. All of these things. And in the midst of this, Jesus alludes to it because he quotes scripture, right? He says, the scriptures say, he's quoting there from a couple places, one of them, Isaiah 56. And Isaiah 56 is talking about some of the most hungry and hurting people of the day. And this is what Isaiah 56 says. It says, I will bring them to my holy mountain of Jerusalem, and I will fill them with joy in my house of prayer. I will accept their burnt offerings and sacrifices because, and this is what Jesus quoted, my temple will be called a house of prayer for all nations. For the sovereign Lord who brings back the outcasts of Israel says, I will bring others too, besides my people Israel. You see, he's talking to hurting, broken people that are desperate to connect with a good and loving and powerful and faithful God. And he's saying, everyone is welcome. Everyone is welcome to come. And he's describing this place at that time where his presence and power resided, the temple. And what he's saying is there is a fruitful place that will produce and create fruitful people. This is what the temple was designed to be, a fruitful place to create fruitful people. Everyone's invited, everyone's included, everyone's welcome, especially those who are desperate and hurting to connect with God, his presence and power. But here's the problem. As Jesus got closer, what he could see was the fig tree. And it was all leaves and no fruit, physically impressive, incredibly beautiful. But you walk in and there was no heart. It had drifted from the mission because people who were hungry and hurting, they were actually being taken advantage of. That's the marketplace that had been set up. People were profiting off of their need. Because every time there's an exchange of money, there's taxes that are being paid. There's taxes being paid to the Romans. There's taxes being paid to the Jews. There's a temple tax that's being paid. And there's an exchange rate that would have taken place. And so every time they're exchanging, they had to buy an animal to make a sacrifice. A lot of them wouldn't or couldn't travel with them. And so they're taking money. And not only that, Jesus, it's interesting, he specifically mentions, he turns over what? The chairs of people selling doves. You see, most families would have sacrificed a goat or a lamb or a sheep on behalf of the family, but not the poor families. They didn't even have that. The best they could hope for was to buy a dove to sacrifice. You might remember Joseph and Mary, right? Jesus' parents, when they went to the temple, you can look it up for extra credit. They offered a dove as a sacrifice because they were poor. And so Jesus is watching and he's seeing that they're profiting off people's brokenness. They're profiting off the hurt and the hunger that people have to connect with God and his power and this freedom that he offers. So Jesus, what does he do? He just starts turning over the tables. And he's saying, you've lost your way. You've drifted. He starts removing the barriers that they had placed up, the obstacles that existed between people experiencing what they needed most. And it's a powerful invitation for everybody to come and a powerful reminder to remove the barriers and the obstacles that exist between people connecting with God and Jesus. And so for us, we think about what are the barriers and obstacles that some people may face in connecting with God, with Jesus, with his church. You think about some of the perceptions people have, right? For some, it may be that we're way more well-known for what we're against than what we're for. I bet most of the world that hasn't set foot in a church or been around any of us as followers of Jesus, they could give you a long list of things that we hate and things that we don't like as opposed to what we're for and what we do love. Maybe for some of the barriers would be a lot of times people feel like you have to become something before you can belong to something. Well, let me get my act together in my marriage and then I'll show up at church. Let me get my act together financially or as a parent. Let me get my habit, my addiction, my behaviors under control. Let me clean it up a little bit before I show up at church, when really God's just inviting you to come just as you are. That's why it exists. And if it's not those things, oftentimes it can be even just theological or doctrine differences. You know, just the little threads that are a little different in the way that we choose to follow Jesus together. Those things can become giant dividing and create walls and obstacles and barriers. And if not that, could be things of this world. Things like politics, the way that you voted Tuesday or the way that you're gonna vote in November. Could become something like race or ethnicity. You see, there's so many barriers and obstacles that people relate to God and his church. And Jesus, you know what he does? He turns those things over and goes, no. It's not about any of those things. There can't be any obstacles and barriers between people coming and experiencing who God is and his love and his power and his freedom and his invitation. So how does this happen? How do we get there with these barriers? And more importantly, how would we prevent them from showing up in our lives or even in our church? If we continue the story after he turns the tables over, as you look down in verse 20, it says, the next morning as they passed by the fig tree that he had cursed, the disciples noticed that it had withered from the roots up. Peter remembered what Jesus had said to the tree on the previous day, and he exclaimed, look, Rabbi Jesus, the fig tree you cursed is withered and died. Then Jesus said to the disciples, have faith in God. Have faith in God. He has a conversation with them about prayer and about intimacy with God and what that looks like lived out. But essentially, he's going, you've got to trust God. Have faith in God. Don't put your trust in anything else. And what he's saying, essentially, it's interesting, this tree, it withered what? From the roots up. And I think there's something powerful there because really, I think what he's saying is that your roots determine your fruit. Your roots determine your fruit. Where you're anchored, where you're planted, what's sustaining your life, what's sharpening your mission and your vision and your values and how those things get lived out, those are your roots. And that's how they shape us. And we can see how it shaped the people in the temple and how those barriers got built, those obstacles that Jesus was turning over in the marketplace, because the hearts of some of the people in that day started to create these barriers. The hearts of some of the wealthiest, most powerful and influential people. They got greedy and they got selfish. So the hearts of some of the most religious people of the day started creating gates and walls and barriers for people to come and just encounter God there with them. You see, in selfishness and self-reliance, if we start to root ourselves in those things instead of having faith in God, all of a sudden it can create some mission drift in our life. We can end up just like the fig tree. All leaves and no fruit. Jesus talked about this when he said, not just have faith in God. Really, what he's offering is an invitation to trust him and to find your faith in God, your trust in God, being rooted in God through your faith in Jesus. And the disciples probably would have remembered a conversation Jesus had with them in John 15 where he says this. He says, yes, I'm the vine. And you're the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them, they will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, if you stay rooted in God through me, you may ask for anything you want and it will be granted. When you produce much fruit, you are my true disciples. This brings great glory to God, my Father. You see, it's interesting, right? All of a sudden, what we see is that the power and the presence of God, it's not about a fruitful place that creates fruitful people anymore. What happens is when we put our faith and our trust in Jesus to have our roots go down into God, now it's about his presence and his power residing in us. And all of a sudden, it's about a fruitful people creating fruitful places. And that's what Jesus is saying. Look, you get to be the fruit of the world. You get to be the people that everywhere you go, all the time, every relationship, every conversation, every interaction is an invitation for you to offer fruit to hungry and hurting and desperate and forgotten and marginalized people that are desperate for the love of God. You get to be fruitful people. Become these people. That's the heart of our church. Many of you are familiar with our mission statement. Becoming a community of authentic Christ followers compelled to change our world. Becoming, because none of us are ever all of who we were created to be because we have a sin nature. But we're becoming because of God's power, his presence that worked within us. Because we're dependent upon Christ. We're following him as best we can together, not individually. Because we want to create a fruitful place where people get to encounter the power, the presence, the love, the grace of God through us. And what does that do? Hopefully it changes the world as we offer fruit to people, people who love, people who serve, people who sacrifice, people who are generous, people who startle the world, people who encourage, people who pray, people who share food and meals. People who love one another. And that also means we have to be people, as we're becoming, being people that are willing to let Jesus turn the tables over in our hearts. When we start creating barriers and obstacles for people to encounter God through us, we have to let him turn the tables over of unforgiveness. We have to let him turn the tables over of bitterness. We have to let him turn the tables over of greed. And selfishness. We have to let him turn the tables over of pride or arrogance. We have to let him turn the table over of self-reliance. And I've got this. Because all of us are so capable We're incredibly educated. God's blessed us. He's given us so much. And we can start to think, I did this. But the reality is, you know what Jesus wants to do? He wants to turn the table over and remind you, hey, I have a mission that's bigger than you could imagine for your life. And your life will be all leaves and no fruit unless you find your roots in God through me. You see, that's the invitation, that we would be people that create this place. Last week, if you were here, I started talking to you about Convoy of Hope, an organization that we partner with, literally to bring God's love and kindness to the hungry and the hurting all around the world. And this past week, I got to see an interview that Matthew Cork, who's our senior pastor of all of our friends' campuses here around Orange County, an interview that Matthew did with Hal, who's the founder of Convoy of Hope. And he is an incredibly beautiful example of the power of God in creating a fruitful person that goes on to create a fruitful place. And so I just want you, if you would, just to, it's about 10 minutes, and let's just watch and just ask God, God, what do you want to say to me about becoming a fruitful person that I might create a fruitful place?
Well, I am here today with Hal Donaldson, and he is the president and the leader of Convoy of Hope. And it is my privilege to be here with you.
Thank you.
And to be on your campus, because today was just a monumental day that I got to be a part of.
Yes.
As you dedicated a new training center and a facility. And God's doing amazing things in and through Convoy.
Thank you.
Hal, I know, in knowing you just a little bit, I'd love for you to go back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. And tell us how Convoy got to where it is today, and how God used, really, some people in your lives and some tragedy in your lives to change the world through what you're doing here at Convoy. So will you share that with us?
Matthew, I want to say thank you to you. Thank you for your friendship, your trust, and Friends Church has been so generous. And you've helped a lot of people, and you've really empowered Convoy of Hope, and we're just grateful to you.
Thank you.
Convoy of Hope started... Really, I have to go back all the way to when I was 12 years of age. You know, we became incorporated in 1994, but it was long before that. When I was 12, my parents were scheduled to attend a business meeting, and my two younger brothers and sister and I were supposed to stay home with a babysitter, but the babysitter was late. And so my dad, he had us pile in the back of the car, and we were gonna have to go to the business meeting with our parents. We were halfway down the road, and my dad glanced in his rearview mirror, and he spotted the babysitter pulling into our driveway. So my dad made a U-turn, dropped the four of us kids off, and we would spend the night with the babysitter after all. Well, about an hour and a half later, there was a knock at our door, and there standing in front of me were two uniformed police officers, and they had come to deliver the news that my parents had been hit by a drunken driver. My father had been killed instantly, and my mom was seriously injured, would be in the hospital for many months with a fractured ankle, broken hip, broken arms, a lot of internal injuries. And, you know, it's really a hard thing to even imagine, but I'll never forget that night because a police officer stepped up to the porch and he addressed a crowd that had gathered in our front yard. Neighbors and friends began to come to the house when news began to spread of what happened. And he addressed the crowd and he said, are there any family members or friends who are here tonight who are willing to take the four children home with them? If not, we'll take the children downtown to the station. And that night, a young couple, Bill and LaVeda Davis, raised their hands and they said, we'll take them. And what's amazing about it is they were new Christians and that all they really owned was a small single wide trailer. That's all they had. And so they invited us into their home. They had children of their own. And so 10 of us were living in a small trailer. Amazing people. They sacrificed their privacy. They drained their savings account so four kids could have a home.
And what were the ages of the kids at that point?
Yeah, I was 12. Yeah. My brothers were 10 and 9, and my sister was 5. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was the beginning of some very difficult years.
Yeah.
Though, you know, hard time. And we didn't have insurance, and the man who hit them didn't have insurance. And so family was forced to really survive on welfare and food stamps.
Yeah.
And my mom recovered. But my mom, just to tell you how traumatic this was, My mom was really scabbed and scarred because the shards from the windshield had just blown up into her face. And so weeks passed before they would allow me to go see my mom. And I think they were trying to shield me, you know. And when I went to the hospital and I saw my mom, I actually passed out. I could not believe that was my mother. And things were hard for us, but they were extremely hard for my mom.
Yeah.
And Matthew, I know you can appreciate this, but you know, when you're 12 and you go and you hunker down outside your mother's door and you listen to her cry,
yeah.
You know, and cry herself to sleep and hear her crying out to God for help, that was traumatic for me. You know, I just couldn't understand how a loving God, just couldn't understand how a loving God could allow a father to be taken from four small children.
Right.
You know, it was a hard time.
Yeah. And in that moment, those people came and took care of you, but really the church alongside of that couple,
yes,
came alongside of you as well. So tell us just a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think they really rescued me from a life of bitterness. Yeah. People, when I go to church and people would see that I had holes in my sneakers, yeah. They would take me to a shoe store to get shoes. And times when our cupboards were empty and we'd have to go to school without a sack lunch in our hand, miraculously, people would show up at our door with bags of groceries, you know. And people always ask me, they say, well, what difference can a bag of groceries really make or a plate of food? Trust me, for a poor and a hungry kid, makes all the difference in the world.
Right.
You know, and what happens in school too when you're poor is you're really bullied a lot of times. You know, your poverty just invites people to bully you. And that certainly was the life I was leading throughout high school. You know, I felt inferior. I had lots of questions for God.
Yeah.
But if it hadn't been for the kindness, the power of kindness, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here today and there wouldn't be a Convoy of Hope.
Yeah.
I'd probably be in jail somewhere.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, because they were just so kind. They wrapped their arms around me and they told me that Jesus had a plan for my life.
Yeah.
And that he hadn't given up on me. And Bill Davis, I remember this, Bill Davis, amazing man who invited us into his home, he saw I was hurting. And he came and he just threw his arm over my shoulder and he said, Hal, listen to me. Don't allow the tragedy of your youth to become a lifelong excuse. Because where you start doesn't have to dictate where you end.
Wow.
Man, those words,
yeah.
Matthew, were just,
and
they were just
words,
beautiful.
And they really shaped the trajectory of your life.
Very much.
So God used those people in your life and that situation, but you went on a journey. And you didn't all of a sudden just start Convoy because you felt like you needed to do something for God. You had a little bit of a journey. Why don't you tell us about that journey and how God actually got you to Convoy of Hope and starting that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, what happens when you're raised poor, you begin a quest not to be poor anymore. And that was certainly the journey I was on. You know, I was really more concerned about building my bank account and building my resume and career than I was doing anything in the way of compassion. And I thought the way to do that was to work my way through college. And so I did. I worked my way through college, earned several degrees, and I found myself in the 20s writing books. I was what they call a ghostwriter or a co-writer. And
I've needed you many times.
Well, hey, here I am. And so anyway, I you know, I got a book contract for some missionaries to write a book for them in Calcutta, India. And I flew to Calcutta. When I landed, they said, well, hey, there's someone we want you to interview for our book. And they took me to meet Mother Teresa.
Oh, wow.
I know, which was surreal. So here I am, my late 20s, interviewing Mother Teresa. And in the course of the interview, Mother Teresa just says, young man, let me ask you a question. What are you doing to help the poor and the suffering? And I like to say, I figured it was not a good idea to lie to Mother Teresa.
No, wasn't right? Smart.
Not smart. So I told her the truth. I said, I'm really not doing much of anything. And she replied, well, everyone can do something. Just do the next kind thing that God puts in front of you. And Matthew, honestly, I went back to my hotel room and I remember opening up the window and looking out on the city of Calcutta and hearing the cries of the poor. Here I was sleeping and living in opulence, a beautiful hotel. But right outside the front door where these people were desperate.
Yeah.
And I just began praying. I said, God, some things got to change in my life.
Yeah.
I came back I came back to the States and just really began praying. I said, God, change me. And you know, that's a dangerous thing to pray, yeah. Right? But I prayed it. Yeah. I said, God, change me. And as I was praying, I felt compelled to do something quite unusual, not to sound spooky, but I just really did. God's telling you to go to 8 cities and to live in the streets for 3 days and 3 nights. And so I went to Miami, Atlanta, Chicago, DC, New York, and I walked the streets after midnight interviewing drug addicts, gang members, prostitutes, runaways, homeless.
See, that's why people don't pray that prayer.
That's right, exactly.
Because God comes and makes us do something like that.
Exactly right.
So you went to 8 cities.
8 cities, yeah, yeah.
And you hung out with those that were hurting and in great need.
And with a hidden tape recorder.
Yeah.
Right? And so I would befriend them, I'd get their story. Meanwhile, I'm recording it. You know, I'm never going to use their name, not going to in any way implicate them, but hidden tape recorder. And all I can tell you is that I saw the underbelly of America. I rode with the police on the midnight shift in each of those cities. I went to crack houses, jail cells, CD bars. I saw the underbelly of America.
Yeah.
And God broke my heart. He broke my heart. So many memories going through my mind in New York City and Miami, just broken, hurting people. And I came back and I felt like God had to do a work in my heart before he could do a work through my hands.
Yeah.
And I came back and along with family and friends, 29 years ago, we loaded up a pickup truck with groceries, $300 worth of groceries. Went into the migrant farm workers in Northern California, right? You know, I'm talking about right off of Highway 5. And started passing groceries out to families and telling them that Jesus loved them, and so did we, and a church right down the street loved them too. All I can tell you is that moment changed my life.
Yeah.
Because it just felt so right. So right and so fulfilling.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, you know, if we could do this once, maybe we could do it again. And God just began to breathe on it and bless it. And, you know, now Convoy of Hope is the 43rd largest charity in the United States, according to Forbes.
Yeah.
We've been able to serve and share Jesus with 200 million people, distribute $2.5 billion in donated food and supplies through churches for the sake of the gospel. It's remarkable what God has done.
Yeah. I love what he said about essentially Jesus had to turn over the table of bitterness in my life so that I could become the kind of fruitful person that he wanted me to be. And then you think about how that's turned into the fruitful places that he's been able to share his story and change people's lives that are hurting and hungry and broken. So as we close, I want to just ask you a couple questions. If you would, just close your eyes. And I invite you to do that just because I don't want there to be any distraction. I just want you to focus on what is it that God is saying to you today. You see, Jesus is here, and he's been speaking to you. Because the presence and the power of God through his Holy Spirit speaks. And what is the table that Jesus needs to turn over in your life? So your life doesn't have to be just a bunch of leaves, but it can be a life that is full of fruit, that's good and lasting. Your life doesn't have to be the departure from the mission and the meaning and the purpose that you were created and designed for. Your life can become everything you wanted it to be and even more than you could imagine. And so part of that I think you have to consider is where are your roots today? Where's your life grounded? Is it in yourself? Is it in the things of this world? Is it in your own power and your own strength? Or is it in Jesus? And as I pray and as we go towards response, maybe for some of you, today's the day that you decide, I'm going to trust Jesus. I'm going to let my roots go down into Him, to allow His power and His strength and His work within me to create the kind of fruit I could never produce on my own. If that's you, if you want to trust your life and let your roots grow into Jesus, would you just raise your hand wherever you are so I can pray for you? Just keep them up just for a moment, just so we can see. So Father, thank you for your love and your kindness and your grace. These hands are just evidence of you and the power of your Spirit at work. God, thank you that you're faithful through your power and your strength to produce fruit, good fruit in our lives. And I pray that even as these people surrender to your will, God, that even in this moment they would experience the freedom and the hope and the forgiveness and the grace and the joy and the contentment and the peace that can only come from you. And I pray that you would overwhelm them as they begin to bear fruit in their lives in ways like they could never imagine. So continue to speak to us as we continue to listen and to worship and to respond to you.